Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Dan Christensen.
You know, one of these times we should reverse it where you do the actual first part and I come in and do the end. It's always been our thing of me doing it first. But
it's your party. You just invite me.
Yeah, still, you know, it could be fun to mix it up sometime.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome back, everyone. It was weird because when we were setting up for this episode, there was almost a concern we weren't going to have enough to talk about. And then stuff came up that will probably cover most of a normal episode for us.
And we can talk about anything, so.
We really can. One of these days, I would like to do a theme episode. I have no idea about what yet. I've done theme episodes, but never with you.
We can figure something out. We're smart people.
Yeah, we can. Well, I suspect in a little bit, we'll be doing a year wrap-up.
And what a year it's been.
Yeah, I'll see if we can get some people in. I'm actually not next week, but the week after. Just quick plug, I will be participating in the year-end wrap-up episode of Don't Read the Latin.
Ah.
And I'm going to see if I can... It'd be nice if I could at least get Jill in. We'd probably have to go over to her house. But get her for a year-end wrap-up because she's done enough episodes this year.
So long as I'm invited in, I understand that that's it.
It's, you know, you're the regular co-host of the show, so yeah, your end wrap-up would be kind of weird without you.
No, I mean more from the perspective of, you know, a vampire being invited into somebody's house, you know,
how does that work when you're invited into the vampire's house?
Ask Bram Stoker.
Or Jill.
Yeah.
You know. So, anyway, you know, with everything that's happened recently, trying to pick out where to start, I think... Because of things going on, movies is definitely where we want to touch on.
Okay.
I haven't seen too much lately. I mean, I know there's been some good stuff and interesting stuff coming into the theaters.
There's that Frankenstein movie that just came out with Dan Radcliffe that is tepid, I think is the best word for it.
And that's a shame. I like him and McAvoy.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of what they're trying to pull off. I kind of like to see it. But yeah, not enough to get me in. I'll wait for VOD.
Yeah.
Because I like Radcliffe and I like McAvoy. I actually heard an interview with him on The Nerdist right before the movie came out.
Oh, McAvoy?
No, Radcliffe.
Oh, okay.
He just got his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Of course he did.
And he actually had Chris Hardwick speak there. He has a lot of respect for Hardwick. And it's also fun listening to exactly how down-to-earth he is. And you always wonder, okay, who got their hands on him to make him that down-to-earth? As far as he's concerned, it was mom and dad.
Well, so, when in doubt.
Yeah. Quick aside. Yeah, that happened. I haven't seen it. I almost got some of my horror friends together to say if we wanted to, but everyone was like, eh.
Well, speaking of movies that are coming out.
So, yeah. It'll have been out for a few days when this episode goes up, but we just had the release of the, I guess, really first full trailer. I don't know if the previous trailer counts as a full trailer for Batman versus Superman. I'm sorry, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Right.
But, the trailer just dropped that, you know, the last one was a teaser and everyone's like, we're not feeling it. So this time, let's just give them the whole plot.
Pretty much.
And, okay, you know what? I'm going to let you start with your impressions on this one.
My impressions can be summed up by saying, okay, I didn't want to see the movie in the first place. The first trailer turned me off from wanting to see the movie. This did nothing to disavow me of that opinion. The only thing that made me scratch my head more than anything was the guy that they have playing Lex Luthor, who... I, for a moment, thought he was going to be the Joker.
That's actually been a common complaint. It's Jesse Eisenberg from The Social Network.
Yeah.
And he was originally considered a very daring choice for Luthor because he's so young. And...
Well, he gets the condescending smart thing right, so...
Sure. But it's like, I think he was playing closer to traditional Lex Luthor in The Social Network than he seems to be here. Because you're right, he seems to be playing like the Joker.
Evil Mastermind versus Evil Mastermind. It's kind of, he's had a chance to get used to it.
Right. So you have the first shots in a trailer of Wonder Woman.
Yes.
So you have that. I mean, the thing that disappoints me most is, we're finally getting a film that has multiple DC heroes on screen. We're getting the Superman-Batman film. we've been wanting for years, and Wonder Woman. And I just, like, I'm like you, I'm not feeling it. And I know there's a lot of, there are people who are hyped about this movie just because it is that.
True.
And I think part of it is a hope springs eternal. I think there's also a lot of people who, for whatever reason, don't like the Marvel movies and are championing these movies because they hope, it's like their hope this will unseat Marvel.
Keep holding on to that hope. Keep hope alive. Yeah. No.
So, yeah, I in the end, it comes down to this. I think there's a lot of potential in the idea, but they had Zack Snyder make the movie.
I know nothing about Zack Snyder. I'm sure you will fill me in on the details. The thing that it comes down to for me, and take away my geek card here if you want to, but I'm starting to get superheroed out.
Well, okay, I've heard that before. I think one of the things, and this is something I've heard people say, the reason that Marvel's not necessarily running into this problem is Marvel very specifically, in their movies, makes sure that each of their movies is actually a different genre.
Right.
You had Captain America Winter Soldier was the spy thriller. You had Ant-Man as the heist movie. Doctor Strange is basically going to be the horror movie.
Yeah.
And by keeping those subtle genre differences in their movies, they don't become boring. Guardians of the Galaxy was the space opera. So,
with a nice little touch of Western in there for good measure. With a
touch of Western in there, which is very common in space opera anyway. Yeah. And it allows them to feel fresher because they're not just retreading. And it with the DC movies, it's just constantly like, oh, let's make another. It's going to be rainy and dark and gritty. The color palette's going to be this because that's what sells. They can't break out of a mold. Now, Zack Snyder, just real quick filmography, he did the 300.
Oh, okay.
So he's worked a lot with comic book adaptations.
So he's used to making video games out of movies, or that, movies out of video games.
And he was the director of Man of Steel.
Yeah.
And Sucker Punch, if you're familiar with that.
What little I saw of it before I got a migraine from watching the trailer, yes.
Right. So, and I'm not sure he's the right person to maybe making the grand superhero epic. Not if you want to have the real superhero feel. It's... Yeah. Now, honestly, I'm much more hopeful about the new solo Batman movie they're talking about. For one reason. It's going to be directed by Ben Affleck.
Well?
And Affleck's a comic fan. And I've said this to other people in private before. I might have even said it somewhere on the podcast before. But if history has shown us anything, it's the best person to be directing Ben Affleck is Ben Affleck.
True.
I mean, Argo... Just
all his work that he did on Good Will Hunting. Yeah.
Yeah. No. He's a great filmmaker.
Okay, you know, I'm gonna float something
here. All right.
DC has been making Batman movies for
since about 85.
Yeah. So 30 years worth of grimdark with a side helping of actually funny occasionally that does horrible and latex nipples. Let's not forget latex nipples. You want to know who I want to see direct a Batman movie that would bring a fresh approach, that would it would take the story, it would be a geek producing it and directing it, writing it, but it would, I think, would give a new a reboot to the series.
Okay.
Kevin Smith.
Wow, you know how close we came to that.
Hmm.
Kevin Smith was hired at one point by Warner Brothers to write a Superman script.
Yeah.
If you get his Evening with Kevin Smith DVD, he talks about the experience. Now, given he was writing the script for what was going to be the Tim Burton-directed Superman film, he again, it's an interesting choice. He certainly would have the feel for it. I don't know that Kevin Smith is good on grander scales. But, you know, there's sure, at least he has the love of the genre, but that kind of wraps back into Affleck. I mean, he and Affleck have always True. Been close. Almost wouldn't surprise me if Affleck's doing a Batman movie that Smith didn't get involved. So,
yeah.
That's what's going on. And the fan community really is kind of, there are some people going, oh my goodness, I can't wait, just because, yeah, we're getting all these things together on the screen. My problem is I've seen epics before. You know, and I loved, example, I absolutely loved the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah, of course.
And then the Hobbit trilogy happened.
True.
And I'm, now, given, I mean, there was the recent news, I don't know if you heard Peter Jackson make his admission. He originally did not want to direct the Hobbit movies. In fact, it was supposed to be Guillermo del Toro.
Which would not have sucked.
But due to various factors, he had to drop out, and so Jackson stepped in. Jackson admits to half-assing the movie. He didn't really want to be there. Probably you got more work out of Andy Serkis.
Well, of course.
But, you know, there's that, you know, even though they're both essentially in the same genre and the same story universe, you know, one is phenomenal and the other is, I really would like to see the fan edit.
I was going to say, I'm looking forward to the fan edit where they go through and cut three movies into two. what did that make me think of? Talking about Peter Jackson, talking about... And I, like I say, the whole idea of Kevin Smith is simply from the idea of the love of the fans.
Sure.
It's like back about 15 years ago when Phantom Menace came out and there were fans that were wanting to sue George Lucas for custody of the Star Wars franchise because he was clearly an unfit parent.
Right.
And now they belong to Disney.
Yeah, and we'll be touching on that very soon. Just to wrap up on this, there have been people online who are... There's one person online who's getting very vocally angry at people who are dissing the trailer.
Because... Okay, there's always going to be a crackpot on the internet.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. The way to get into an argument on the internet, step one, express an opinion. Step two, wait.
Yeah.
And the common retort is, what do you mean? You don't have to wait. Which proves the point.
So let's talk about Star Wars now. So we are today recording day.
Yes.
Not go up day, but recording day is the 3rd of December.
So 15 days.
15 days and counting. Now, I am not going to go on opening day.
No.
I don't have the endurance.
I have a job. I want to be able to go and enjoy it and appreciate it for what it is, not...
I have a little free time on my hands, so I may go to a matinee in the middle of the week.
There you go.
And I don't want to wait very long to see it.
Oh, no.
And we've got more trailers coming out. There's kind of a... Somebody said, if you look at all of the Force Awakens trailers,
mm-hmm.
and somebody even did a comparison to the Superman Batman trailer, where there were some people that felt that maybe this trailer gave away a little too much plot.
That the
Superman
oh yes
trailer gave away a little too much plot, whereas if you look at every single Force Awakens trailer, even mash them all together, I defy you to tell me coherently what the storyline is.
That's both a good thing and a bad thing.
Well, here's the thing: I don't want trailers to tell me too much about the movie.
Of course,
you know what? I went and saw Nolan's Inception,
yeah,
based on loving the trailers. But not having a clue what the movie was going to be about because the trailers didn't give away plot. All I was going in was based on the knowledge of A, I like the visuals in the trailer, and B, I trusted Nolan.
That's okay. You went into the movie not knowing what was going on in Inception. I came out of the movie not knowing what was going on.
There's that. With Star Wars, again, we have a basic idea of what's probably going on.
Oh, yeah.
We can tell, I mean, little details have been given out in press releases, and we see the imagery. And I think there's a little bit of faith of, and it's not, everyone focuses so much on J.J. Abrams. My faith, I'm okay with Abrams. I have no problem. I think he's a great director choice for this movie. My faith is that the script was written by Lawrence Kasdan.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. Say those two magic words to me right
now. So the script was written by Lawrence Kasdan, and...
And to be fair, for those coming in late to the movie, Lawrence Kasdan is the guy who wrote Empire Strikes Back.
He wrote Empire Strikes Back, and he was involved in the script for Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
But he was the primary author of Empire Strikes Back, yeah.
Yes.
And he also was very heavily involved in the Raiders of the Lost Ark movies.
Yeah.
So he's got a great track record with this kind of thing. He's written what many consider arguably the best of the Star Wars movies thus far.
Exactly.
So I have faith that we're going to have a coherent story going on.
Yep.
The imagery looks very promising. I mean, it's like, well, this certainly looks like a Star Wars film.
Yeah.
And again, you've got the original trio back, although they're very teasing Luke right now.
Of course, of course.
But I'm fine with that.
Which allows everyone to jump to all sorts of conclusions.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, I look at it and it's like, all right, we are, and they're setting up, yes, we've got the original actors in, but we're setting up the new generation.
Yes.
And Daisy Ridley and John Boyega look like great shepherds of our future geekdom.
I do love the stories coming out that John Boyega has been sharing about the audition process when he's coming back and he comes and he tells his dad, he's like, Dad, I'm going to be in Star Wars. And his father's like, that is wonderful. I can't believe you made it into Star Wars. 2, 3. What's Star Wars?
Yeah. So, well, yeah, but it's those beautiful, it's these beautiful moments. But I mean, obviously a month from now, we will know how it really sussed out. And
15 days and about 3 hours. Yeah.
So, I mean, hopefully when we have that discussion, it's going to be, yes, it lived up to our expectations. And it is not the crushing weight of despair. What's interesting, speaking of Star Wars news, so they're already working on the next one.
Of course.
I mean, they're already filming episode 8.
If they weren't, I'd be surprised.
And they're also filming the side movies, the non-numbered movies.
Oh, right. The Rogue Squadron and isn't it the...
There's going to be a Boba Fett and, yeah. And they're right now in the casting stages of the young Han Solo stories.
Awesome.
So Han, when he was like pre... And here's the question of who's going to play young Han Solo?
There, you know, there's a young Indiana Jones joke in there. And yeah. If I could remember who it was that played him, I would have made it.
Sean Patrick Flannery.
Well, he's a little too old now.
I'll always remember him because of Boondock Saints, but that's just me. I know that the one actor I can think of at the top of my head who has been named as a possible young Solo is Tom Felton.
It would help him redeem himself so he wouldn't be typecast as a whiny bad guy for the rest of his life.
True. So we'll see where that comes from. For those of you who don't know, that Tom Felton was Draco Malfoy.
Yeah.
But you've got the statement that's been made, how do you differentiate these movies, is in the end, the main line of Star Wars movie will always be about the Skywalker family.
Okay.
They've decided is the through line.
Right.
It's always about the Skywalkers, which again goes back to one of our new characters has to be somehow related to,
in theory,
Luke and Leia. But the other movies could be anything else. So Rogue Squadron is the story of how the Rebels stole the original Star Wars Death Star plans.
Okay.
The plans that Leia hid in R2-D2.
Okay.
How those plans were acquired in the first place. And that's the movie that's got Donnie Yen and Mads Mikkelsen and Alan Tudyk. And it's just like, yeah, let's get all these people in that are just going to make the fans go crazy. I haven't heard anything about any cat. I think they're still in the planning stages also of the Boba Fett movie.
Okay.
But with that, you really have the ready-made star. I cannot think of the actor's name right now, but the actor who played Jango Fett.
Oh, yeah.
In the prequel, since Boba was his clone,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the natural choice to get in there to play Boba Fett if you're doing a Boba Fett movie.
Of course.
Or somebody that looks a lot like him. So you've got that. So, yeah, there's, I mean, a lot going with Star Wars. But again, this is the Disney being, you said it early, like one of your first episodes on the show, about Disney having become the caretakers of our fandoms.
Yes, in loco parentis.
Right, because they've got Marvel, they've got Star Wars, they've got the Muppets.
And they wring every last penny out of us for every last bit of it. Yes.
You know, and that's, you know, we say that, but really name a business that isn't trying to do that. And
of
especially
course.
A media business. They want to make money. It's,
of course.
It's the nature of the business. I one of the things I'm always really careful about is if you're going to decry people from trying to make money off of things, you might as well give up on the art because it can't go anywhere.
Of course. No, I simply look at it at the same way that I look at some of it. How it was like a few years ago when it seems like every 80s band was doing a reunion tour.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting our childhood sold back to us.
Yeah, but on the other hand, if they're doing it in a way that's making us happy.
True. Which begs the question, I have to ask, in a similar vein. We're familiar with the concept of what is euphemistically called fan service.
Right.
Which usually is, you know, a long and lingering glance over a well-toned body, be it male or female, has something that's just kind of thrown in, but it makes all the fans happy. I'm wondering, does that shot of Han Solo and Chewbacca at the end of the first trailer where he says, "Chewie, we're home," does that count as fan service simply because it made everyone go, "Yes!"
Well, you know, I have heard fan service described as the one you were discussing, the titillation fan service, is just one form of fan service.
Oh, okay.
And that the idea of fan service is when you're throwing in something specifically to make the fans happy, that is fan service.
Winks, nods.
Sure. A lot of Easter eggs are considered fan service.
Okay.
So, I mean, to answer your question, effectively, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely is. And done right, appropriate, non-exploitative fan service is sort of like spice in a meal.
Sure.
It livens things up. It makes the fans happy. And as long as it doesn't do anything that makes it impossible for the non-fans to enjoy the product, you're doing fine. So, speaking of Easter eggs, I'm going to shift gears on us now. We just had the release in like the last week and a half of Marvel's next Netflix series, Jessica Jones. And the reason I bring it up is there was an Easter egg in it. You have the villain Kilgrave is played by David Tennant. And at one point he is getting yelled at by our hero. And even though it's referring to the age of his character, the line is, "You're not 10 anymore."
Nice.
And he was, of course, the 10th Doctor. So, yeah.
Nice. I like that. I like that. Okay. I have to, I forget what the word is when judges step back. I have to step back.
You recuse.
Have to recuse myself of this because I saw half of the first trailer to Jessica Jones, and that was enough to convince me that I can't watch this movie.
So I watched the whole thing. And here's the thing with Jessica Jones. A, it's a very good series. It's a very well-written, well-acted, well-directed, well-put-together series, much as Daredevil was. The difference is they are very much building off of the work of Brian Michael Bendis, who created Jessica Jones, and off of things from the original series. The thing that is that because of the nature of the villain, this is a series where you are dealing with very heavy issues that have made it very hard for people to watch. It is unapologetic in discussing the issues of rape, manipulation, abuse, misogyny, and PTSD.
Yeah.
And the fact that the creator admitted, no, this isn't subtle or happenstance. This was on purpose. That there was a lot of work with professionals to get accurate representations of these things in it and to be the most blunt and frank conversation possible because Netflix gives them that freedom. And Marvel said, Marvel literally, the only restriction they really put on was, you know, no F-bombs and no frontal nudity.
Hilarious. Okay.
And other than that, Marvel said, let's explore within those confines. And they pushed those confines, and they had such frank discussion. I have reached out with friends of mine who have had abuse issues in their past, who are trying to work their way slowly through the series because they feel it's an important series. They're glad that it's out there. They're glad it's generating the discussion. But because it is tripping their personal triggers, they have to come into the series carefully and well-prepared.
This reminds me of my brother-in-law who, when he was 12, worked his way through the second Aliens movie by watching it 30 seconds at a time.
Sure.
Yeah. That's about where I would have to be. And I'm glad that people are taking that stretch and stretching themselves and working within their boundaries to be able to enjoy it. Not me.
Well, and I think part of that is because it's upfront that this is what this story is going to be about.
Yep.
It doesn't hide it. I mean, the cast is great. I've kind of followed Kristen Ritter for years. Only recently did I realize I'd been one of the people making a misassumption. I thought she was John Ritter's daughter and Jason Ritter's sister. Turns out completely unrelated to them. Although based on how she looks, I can see where the mistake comes in. But I mean, one of the things about her, and this is kind of part of the gag from the character of Jessica in the comics, who has super strength, is you look at her and your first thought is, I mean, she is very pale skinned, dark hair. You could almost go porcelain doll, except A, Ritter made sure to get toned for the thing. So, you know, there is some representation of musculature there, but she still looks like a very small, slight thing. Yet they're playing with a character that can take on whole rooms of bikers and thrash them around. So there's already that dichotomy. But they do, I mean, they literally have the character admit in the text that the reason she drinks so much alcohol, she directly says she's self-medicating.
Yep.
She's fully cognizant of her issues and actually uses real techniques recognizable to trauma therapists to cope with her PTSD. But so, I mean, yeah, hard watch. Now, as a representation of the work, very true to the characters.
Good.
I mean, they get there. If anything, the one variation is they actually make Kilgrave worse in the show than he was in the comics. They take already a vile character and kick it up a notch.
Helped in no small part by the fact that he's being played by someone that an entire generation of people has imprinted on as the Doctor, because he's so good and helpful and kind and
sick and twisted. Yeah, it's great performance. It is a great, and again, very self-aware performance of a character that he's himself not very self-aware. So it's, I certainly recommend it with the caveat of know what you're getting into. And do whatever, if you're going to watch it, do whatever it is to make your safe space. And don't feel bad if you have to decide, and I've watched enough for this episode.
Yep.
We'll come back later.
Yep.
But I do want to point out that this is another case of a really, really well rounded out supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosario Dawson comes back as Claire the nurse from Daredevil. And from what we see, she's going to be in every one of the Netflix series. She's going to be like their Coulson.
Excellent.
She's going to be the through line that connects the entire thing together. Mike Coulter, who played Luke Cage in this, the next Netflix series is Luke Cage.
So,
but because of how interconnected Luke and Jessica are in the comics, they felt it was really important to have Luke in here because he is such an important character in Jessica's life and in the original comic series that they felt it would have seemed kind of odd to not have him there.
Yeah.
But one person said, yeah, we're kind of catching Luke in what would be the middle of his story. Most of the Luke Cage series will take place after Jessica Jones, but some of the episodes will have to flash back to prior to fill in the back details.
Of course.
So he was great. He was well cast. And one of the reasons I'm looking forward to Luke Cage, and if you look at my Tumblr, you've been seeing me reblog certain... Somebody forgot to mute their telephone.
Naughty, naughty. Go on.
That's a... podcast faux pas. Anyway, the in the comics, of course, Luke Cage was a direct comic book answer to the blaxploitation films.
Right.
But also to, in that vein, he was also a reaction to the social events going on at the time that led to the creation of said films. He's very much meant to be the comics answer to Shaft.
Yeah.
And even in his earliest appearances, there was, I mean, race was an integral part of the character. And there was an essay once written about how Luke Cage is in so many ways an anti-lynching fantasy. Because his primary power is he can't be hurt. I mean, yes, he's also super strong.
Yes.
But the big deal about Luke Cage is bullets bounce off of him. You know, you tie a rope around his neck, he's just going to swing there for a minute while he gets untied, and then he's going to make you eat it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, I think he has made somebody eat something like that before.
Wouldn't doubt it.
But yeah, he's the representation of of the African-American man who cannot be subjugated by the traditional violent methods used against them because he's completely immune to them.
Yeah.
And that does open up a lot of interesting story narrative, especially in the current climate. I know very little about what the storyline in the Luke Cage comics is going to be, other than he is dealing with what you would consider street level issues. I believe the primary antagonist is going to be a drug dealer. But the point being that, you know, since they took the time to discuss these important issues in Jessica Jones, it strikes me that they're not going to suddenly skirt away from those kind of issues in Luke Cage.
Exactly. Because, I mean, come on, you think about it. Okay, so first you have Daredevil, which is, you know, the blind Catholic ninja fighting gentrification in Midtown Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Then you have the alcoholic super strong woman who's dealing with PTSD issues. I have no doubt in my mind that they will raise the bar yet again with Luke Cage. I simply hope that I can actually watch this one.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, and I know this was your, because we had this discussion with Daredevil, because I'd watched it before you, and you asked me on the level of violence, and we had that discussion because, maybe it's because I'm such a horror fan, I have a higher threshold mm-hmm. for certain violent acts on screen, and pointing out that, you know, at one point I was like letting you know, yeah, this is the worst the series is going to get.
Yeah.
The problem is when I was thinking about the violence in Jessica Jones, I realized, yeah, there are some comparable violent acts in Jessica Jones to what happened in Daredevil. Things you specifically didn't like.
Yeah.
So, but I think that's also, again, the pointing out, and this is one of the things I think I am liking with the Marvel Netflix series is they've decided that they don't have to dumb themselves down to the common denominator, that it's not going to be for everyone.
Yep.
This, while we are discussing the Netflix series, let's turn our eyes towards other comic book related television endeavors.
Okay, this is all your ballgame because I don't watch TV, but go ahead.
So, keeping in the vein, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Ah.
So this season, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. really has hit their stride.
Excellent.
A lot of people who had veered away from the first season and were staying away during the second season have come back and said, okay, well, now they're at this point where, well, basically it's following what would be considered the fairly standard trajectory of a Joss Whedon series, where you get through at the beginning and it takes time to find its stride because they, even though I know it's more Jed Whedon than Joss, takes time to find its stride, but once it finds it well. And that's where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is right now. Part of that being they finally really embrace superpowers.
Good.
I mean, you have characters, and regular characters on the show that do now have superpowers. It's very entrenched in things from the Marvel comics, touching on the greater Marvel universe, but that definitely telling its own story. So it's been doing very well. The arc that they're really continuing an arc they started last season. And I'm not trying not to give too many spoilers away, but
don't worry.
It's well worth the effort. And looking back at some of the critiques from season one, because they are sort of revisiting some of the things from season one, it looks like they're trying to build to a head to the Grant Ward story. Oh, they got to do something to finish that off because, I mean, in first season, it was great. One of our heroes turns out to be the bad guy. And the thing I love is at no point did the series even ever flirt with the idea they were going to redeem him.
Yes.
And,
okay.
And he is, in fact, the primary antagonist at this stage.
Go figure.
So, I mean, that's just great. Because you often when you have a villainous reveal of a character who was popular, and Whedon has done this himself, you know, redeem him and make him part of the gang. No even desire to go there.
Nope.
This is a bad guy and he is going to remain a bad guy.
I have yet to see the most recent season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I only can get it through Netflix. But the thing that I'm most curious about
mm-hmm.
is when does Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 3 end for, you know, current you know, when in 2016 will it end versus when does Captain America Civil War come out?
Well, here's the thing. If they go by the schedule they've usually gone by, usually you have the spring Marvel movie being sometime in May.
Right.
And the TV season usually stretches until about mid-June.
Okay, so there is like going to be a likely crossover, because I know like with Age of Ultron they did it. Mm-hmm. And what was it? Thor Dark World. They interwove those a little bit.
Yeah, about the only one they didn't do any interweaving at all. Well, there was no Guardians of the Galaxy, obviously.
And no Ant-Man.
And no Ant-Man, but I think it's because Ant-Man is still so unknown to the universe at large.
Right.
They certainly talked in the early part of the season about Sokovia,
mm-hmm.
which is the country that was the centerpiece of Age of Ultron.
Right.
And I know that, interesting point, the Civil War is going to involve something called the Sokovia Accords.
Of course.
So that, you know, that's having those events there. They certainly reference a lot of the events to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
What a lot of people are kind of waiting for the movies to at some point reference an event for the TV shows. But we'll see what happens. Moving on. All right. Gotham. Here's our update on Gotham. As I've said many times, Gotham is this very weird and at times frustrating mix of wonderful and awful. And that this season, what it's had going for it the most is they've kind of toned down the awful and tried to bring up the wonderful a little bit more. Apparently, it wasn't that they got rid of the awful, it's that they decided to backload it into the fall finale.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I watched the fall finale, and, you know, it's leading up to all these events they've been setting up all season. And if I had to describe the fall finale in one word, that word would be anticlimactic.
Which is definitely a hyphenate, but yes.
Yeah, and it is... Well, and they do things where it's like, okay, without giving spoilers, you did something with a character that doesn't fit the character and you can't really walk it back. So that's, we're just going to have to live with that now.
Are you kidding? I've seen people walk back the strangest damn stuff. But granted, that's real life as opposed to, you know.
Yeah.
Because in, you know, fiction has to make sense. Real life can do whatever it wants.
That is true. Yeah, so that wasn't very good. I mean, there was some nice touches to showing, oh, another piece of the puzzle that turns Bruce Wayne into Batman right there.
Yeah.
Thank you for highlighting that. But yeah. The other thing, now we haven't actually got to the fall finales yet of the CW shows, Arrow and Flash.
Mm-hmm.
But they just finished a two-part crossover that is... basically the setup for the third series coming in January, Legends of Tomorrow.
Okay.
The thing I'll say about that is the writing on Flash and Arrow tends to be a little bit step above what we see on the other shows. They're very fully embracing their comic book roots. They're very happy to go there as far as the events you would expect to find in a comic book. And unlike last year's crossovers, where they went, well, we got these shows, there has to be a crossover. Their crossovers last year were two self-contained episodes shown in the same week that happened to feature all of the heroes. This time, it was really a two-hour-long story broken into two parts so it could be shown as both shows. But you know, there was the portion shown in The Flash took place predominantly in Arrow's city. Star City, and it was just, they were telling one story, brought all the characters together, and the Flash and Arrow characters had equal prominence in both parts. So, excellent. Yeah, it was good writing, and it really struck me, okay, their mandate here was we have a story to tell.
Yes.
We're going to tell the story, and we're not going to do anything artificial to make it, this is the Flash part of the story, and this is the Arrow part of the story. This is the story, and this is the role that the Flash characters play in it, and this is the role that the Arrow's characters play in it. And We're throwing in Hawkman and Hawkgirl because this is how we introduce these characters who are going to be prominent in the new series.
Because we can't.
Yeah, basically. So I thought that was really well done. The other one to talk about, well, there's two things to talk about, but the big one, so Supergirl.
Okay.
Has been going on. Now, Supergirl is from the same producers as Flash and Arrow, but is on CBS. Different network.
You know, I just have to interject. I pity the future archaeologists that are going to have to try and piece all this stuff together.
Yeah. And
just get, go on.
It's funny you brought that point up last time.
I'm sorry.
No, but you were, because we were talking about mythologies.
Oh, right.
So it's definitely, it had a strong ratings for the pilot, but I think, and this is, I count as a good thing, the pilot really has been the weakest episode thus far. I felt the pilot rushed. It was trying to establish all of these things, and I think it should have been a 2-hour. I think it may have been in the writer's head originally a 2-hour, and they had to squish it down to an hour. But they've been doing better with the individual episodes, and I think there's also probably a case of going along. I would hope either they had these arcs worked out ahead of time, or they realized, we're having some problems with these characters. Well, let's not wait to fix them. Let's just start working on it now. The biggest was the character of Cat Grant, who was the mean boss, and who was in the pilot and the first episode was the mean boss. And now they're digging into, okay, well, why is she this way? And, you know, having her start acting as a mentor to Kara. In the, you know, she doesn't know she's Supergirl, but at times will talk to her about, you know, it is a show, it's the other end of feminism. If Jessica Jones is feminism from all the crap women have to deal with, from the abuse standpoint, then Supergirl is very much about what women have to deal with in fields predominantly male.
Okay.
Because you have Cat Grant, who's the businesswoman, runs her own company, but even has the line where she directly says, you know, the person who taught me once threw a chair through a window. I can't even throw a Kleenex in anger. Sure. And there was this whole discussion about also one of the prominent characters. They have African-American actor playing Jimmy Olsen.
Cool.
And rather than just ignore it, they actually have a discussion about both the female characters and the African-American character have to be careful with displaying their anger because of social pressure. They had that discussion on Supergirl.
They went there. Excellent.
They did. And so, yeah, it's the show took a few episodes to find its leg. Thankfully, it didn't take half a season to find its writing leg. So they've been doing a good job. So, I'm optimistic about Supergirl. Interestingly, there's been a lot of people about Supergirl versus Jessica Jones. And, well, is Supergirl doomed because of Jessica Jones? And
who says it has to be a zero-sum game?
Well, and that's been the argument. Because that's what everyone's trying to treat it as. Well, you have this female-led show that's doing so great, so clearly it spells the end for this other female-led show. And it's like, you never say that about male-led shows.
Well, I was going to say, it spells the end to hearing people complain about the lack of strong female characters.
And it doesn't even really do that, because I don't think two shows cover that.
True, true.
Or three, if we count Agent Carter, which will come in January again.
Yes. But owe her value.
Yeah, but it is more the discussion of people trying to say that it's not a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
We are allowed to have both. And as part of the campaign to deal with that, the stars from both shows have been tweeting love to each other.
Excellent.
To in support of their efforts to kind of, yeah, no, we don't have to go there.
Yeah.
We are allowed to have both of these shows. And, you know, hopefully this will lead the way to going, yeah, we can have more shows like this and more movies like this.
Maybe even a toy or two. Sorry.
Yeah. Did I tell you what we're planning on doing with a friend's daughter?
No, but should we say this in case she hears it before Christmas?
No, it's because this is a plot I have. So I have a friend who cosplays.
Okay.
And her daughter has gotten into cosplay, and her daughter loves the Marvel movies.
This is the one who was the littlest Winter Soldier.
Look up Tiny Winter Soldier or Littlest Winter Soldier, and you'll see this girl. And so this year she went as the Black Widow.
Nice.
And she was very upset about the lack of Black Widow merchandise.
Of course.
And so we've talked about getting her in her Black Widow costume, holding up a sign that says, "I want more toys that look like me."
Excellent.
And I think we're going to, because that's, I don't mind saying it here, because, you know, if we can actually get it to happen, that's, and I think that needs to become the new meme.
Yes.
Girls in costumes going, "I want more toys that look like me."
Yes. And maybe even a few that aren't princesses.
Yeah. Well, again, she wants to be Black Widow. We get, you know, a few others. I don't even care if it's Princess Batman.
Indeed.
So with that, is there anything else you wanted to cover this time around?
I wasn't sure exactly where you were headed, but I did want to throw out a plug for the new podcast that
is a great point. And you got me into it. Why don't you, because this was your leading me somewhere. So why don't you?
I recently discovered a serial podcast called Wolf 359. No relation to Star Wars or Star Trek. It is a space station in orbit around the actual star, Wolf 359. Damn good, I have to say. It's two seasons in. They're doing really well. And actually, just this week, they won, I think, 6 different audiobook awards for writing and for music and for acting. And it's really catching on. So Wolf 359 FM or Wolf 359 Radio, I think, is...
Well, the FM is their website.
Okay.
And the radio is their Twitter account.
Okay.
I know that because I listened to like a couple episodes today. Since you turned me on to it, I've been trying to listen to it and play catch up. It was interesting because since I am working on a scripted podcast, you know, I'm trying to find more of these. In fact, you brought this to my attention as a recommendation for another one to listen to. And I'm glad you did. It is good. It's a tighter cast.
Yeah.
There's only 4 active characters on the show primarily.
At that point, yes.
And I find it interesting that 2 of the characters are voiced by the same actor.
Yes.
And that there's 1 episode where they're the only 2 characters in the episode. So it's this actor basically talking to himself for an entire episode.
They talk about it, and it's actually he's having to do, on small bits, he will do it, just switch from one voice to the other. On big ones like that, he has to record all of one voice and then do all the other voice.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Just from a logistics point of view, that makes perfect sense. It does have the advantage of having a tight, keeping it tight. It's easier to put stuff out the fewer moving parts you have.
Yeah, fewer moving parts, although apparently not all of the actors have ever been in the same room at the same time.
Well, they've got an interesting trick. I was listening, because part of why I listen to things like this is I'm looking for tricks.
Oh, yeah.
And realization of ways they can get around that.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest is they have a lot of characters that speak through intercoms.
Yeah.
Or are often not in the same room. So if they're not in the same recording space, it's, you know, or somebody's, "I'm recording this and sending it to you," you're just laying filters in. It doesn't matter what it sounds like.
Exactly.
I think for the ship AI... Mm-hmm. Wouldn't surprise me if she's never...
She's actually the one that's in a different city. She's in a different state.
And that makes perfect sense because her voice is already filtered.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like that. One thing I noted, and this, I did some research after the fact, and other people had noted it. Probably the first 2 or 3 episodes, I think they may have taken their initial cues from Welcome to Night Vale.
Yeah.
Because it had a feel like Welcome to Night Vale, format-wise. But I think they very quickly got away from that and found their own footing. And it is definitely its own thing now.
Yeah. They've grown into their own. I will specific... for everybody else, they're about, 20-minute episodes, tops?
The average... I've noticed the episodes vary in length.
Yeah.
But they hover around the 20-minute mark.
And at this point, there's 28 of them all total. So, you know, you're only looking at a bit... a small amount compared to some of the grand epic things sure. they've got out there. I will also say that there's specifically an episode in season two that is probably one of the best stories I've heard in a very long time, and especially considering that it is coming from outside the normal media markets. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed with it.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, I'm glad you turned me on to it. It has added to my list of scripted podcasts I'm listening to figure out what bits I want to borrow when we put ours together. We're going to have a sneak preview for those of you who may eventually hear our things. The biggest challenge we're going to have is we have a bigger cast of characters.
Oh, my, yes.
You know, considering that the characters that show up in most episodes, there are six of them.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of side characters. So, I mean, that was one thing I was like, well, yeah, but then again, we're talking about doing shorter seasons, and more lead up work, and who knows where we're going to go.
Exactly.
But, we also have a lot of people in the local area that want to participate, so I don't think we're going to have trouble.
Helps.
Yeah. Anyway, with that aside, anything else?
What are you reading?
So I did finally finish Shepherd's Crown, the final yes. Terry Pratchett. I managed to power through. Classic Pratchett.
Of course.
In so many ways. It was an interesting read. It was interesting knowing that he did manage to get it finished before he passed. And now we get Sam visiting. And my cat has decided to make his once-an-episode appearance. I guess they said that had he not passed, he would have himself liked to have done another draft. He usually writes the entire book and then does several pass-throughs, and this one didn't get as many pass-throughs. But, no, great Pratchett book. It was a good ending for the series.
Good.
So, as I said last time, I'm preparing to read the Aeronauts Windlass by Jim Butcher.
Oh, right.
As my next book. I've got it. I actually have my copy of it now.
Okay.
I just haven't actually had a chance to start reading it because I've had other things going on, including trying to write and having other activities going on. Mm-hmm. So, how about you? What are you on right now?
Since last I was here, I burned through Three Body Problem. I actually had to ask a friend of mine for proper pronunciation. It's Shusin Liu, is the author. And Three Body Problem also won the Hugo for best novel this year, and I tore through that, and I'm on the second book, The Dark Forest, which is out. Sadly, the third book in the trilogy isn't due out in English until March of next year.
Ah.
But remarkably good books. I'm really getting into it. Got some teeth to it. It is interesting trying to read something that's been translated from a different language,
mm-hmm.
Because there are just different manners of speaking that obviously come through. But once I finish Dark Forest, the next thing that I have on my list is Armada by Ernie Cline, who is the guy who wrote Ready Player One, which is soon to be coming to a theater near you, directed by Steven freaking Spielberg.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I hope, you know, okay, this is a small thing. And I know people rarely pay attention to things like this, but the audiobook was read by Will Wheaton.
Oh, yeah.
And I really hope they at least find a cameo for him in the movie somewhere.
Well, don't they? I think they have a throwaway line in the book about President Wheaton doing something or...
You hope.
Yeah. So there is that the it is a little bit of a bummer because Spielberg has specifically said that he's not going to reference any of his movies, which he thinks that would be a little too incestuous. But at the same time, it is I'm very excited to see what they end up doing with it. I think it's going to be that's one of those ones that I'm going to go to simply because. I love Ernie Cline. I really enjoyed Ready Player One. It is nostalgia porn. It is, I mean, sure. It's all those wonderful, happy things that you can remember about being a kid in the 80s, even if you weren't a kid in the 80s. So, yeah, there is that.
So, last thing I want to bring up before we wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you, if I remember correctly, you really weren't into Mystery Science Theater 3000.
I've seen bits and pieces. I'd never watched it religiously.
Right. So I was one of the fans from the early days. I found it almost right away when it came out on Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm.
Followed it for years. Followed it all the way through the cast changes and the network changes. And so there's the campaign now to bring the show back.
Yes.
That, I mean, they hit their funding. They're working on the stretch goals, and they've got a specific formula of X money equals X episodes.
Sure.
And one of the things they've been doing is teasing fans to keep the conversation alive is slowly, as they hit certain milestones, announcing the cast.
Right.
And right now, it's really got a great cast. So the host, you know, it's not going to be Joel or Mike. And what Joel did is he had done some work with Nerdist. And one of the co-hosts of the Nerdist podcast is a comedian named Jonah Ray.
Okay, yeah.
And he ended up on another thing doing a writing project with Jonah, liked him and went, you know what? You're a funny guy. You're a great writer. You've obviously, from all your podcasting, you've got a great voice. And you've actually done riffing on other people's stuff. So he hired Jonah. Well, he can't officially hire anyone until the funding is done.
Of course.
But so he's got Jonah as the new host.
Mm-hmm.
Got two other comedians to be Crow. I can't remember their names right now. To be Crow and Tom Servo.
Okay.
Who are doing their interpretations of the voices.
Okay.
Which is fine. They had each of them the third actors to portray the characters.
Mm-hmm.
New mad scientist will be Felicia Day.
Which means she might actually have a role where she won't die.
Yeah, she's Yay! Called herself the female Sean Bean, and she's actually playing the daughter of the original mad scientist.
Awesome.
And they just announced this week the henchman.
Is this Patton Oswalt?
Patton Oswalt.
Nice.
To the point of Patton actually came up with the name of his character. He's actually going to wear the hair and the costume of the original henchman, TV's Frank.
Okay.
And his character is going to be called TV's son of TV's Frank. Which is a name that Patton himself came up with. And here's the thing. You've got these creative people who are also, they're not just going to be doing the on-screen stuff. They're going to be part of the writing staff.
Awesome.
So you've suddenly got Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt's minds.
Well, and one of the people who've been bringing us the Nerdist for the last several years,
yeah,
as well.
So. And Jonah, well, and again, that's why he hired Jonah, his ability to do all that. So yeah, it's looking good. I'm looking forward to seeing what we get.
I know.
And my cat's getting overly excited.
Apparently.
So that's probably a good sign that we've hit a good closing point for this week. So if you want to get a hold of Daniel or I, we can be reached at www.fanboynewsnetwork.com. Just go to this episode's entry and leave us a note in the comment section. Until then, we will see you next time.
Y'all have a good week, or two.
Or three.
Sure.
Or whatever. Who knows when we're coming.
Have a good life.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network, and is copyright 2015 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.